Blog Talk Radio.
You're not the chief of police. No, I'm not the chief of police yet. Okay, we're going to get started here.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Everybody had a good weekend out there. Everybody seems safe so far. Got one more night to get through tonight. Hope you guys take care of each other. On Facebook Live crew, going checking everything out. Good morning, John, Robert. Good to see everybody. You on here? We do two discussions. We do Facebook Live at the show. But we're trying to cover all of them. Now it's this time. What's going on, Brandon? Good morning. All right, here we go. Good morning, everybody. It's Saturday morning. That means it's time to go behind the blue curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. Like I say every week, this is not my show. This is our show. This is where all of us work together. And we talk about some of the issues that we're facing today in this country in regards to police relations and also race relations. We want police reform. Ultimately, we've got a demographic of people who just say enough is enough, and that includes some blue people. That's right. There are some officers that are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Maybe they're not going to speak up. Maybe they can't speak up. Maybe they won't speak up. So we're going to do it for them. On here, everybody's opinion is equal. I don't care who you are. I'm not interested in your title. I don't need the REB period or the DR period or the PhD comma. I don't need all that on here. Here we get down to the issue. And some of us who've been educated on the issues may find ourselves behind the eight ball because there may be some people who call here or comment on the Facebook Live who are living the nightmare that we're all casually talking about. So obviously, they're able to give much more insight. And these are the voices that are usually not heard from, that are usually kept in the background and kept quiet. But on here, they're not kept in the background. They can talk. So what I wanted to talk about today is I wanted to get into community policing. And I know you guys said, well, we've already talked about that. Yeah, we've talked about it enough. For those that have followed the show, if you guys didn't, you go to stanmason.com, click on the Listen tab. The whole archive of radio shows is there. You can pick and choose. And go back through and listen to them at your leisure. You can download them, do what you want with them. You know, I don't have any sponsors. I don't want any sponsors because right now we don't know who we're going to have to get up in. And if we got to do it, I don't want to hear, well, we got a contract and you can't say this, you can't say that. This is going to be one place where people come and they don't have to worry about hurting anybody's corporate feelings. I'm not interested in whether a church's feelings get hurt, whether a police department or a police chief's feelings get hurt, whether the NAACP's feelings get hurt. When we come in here and we get to it, we're just going to get to it. You know, this is not a pro-black show. It's not an anti-white show. It's not an anti-blue show. It's not a conservative or liberal. It's not a Republican or Democrat show. This is a real show. This is where we just get to it like we do in the barbershop, and we keep it real on here. And what I wanted to talk about in community policing, for those of you all that have followed, you know, we talked about in the introduction in past shows, what exactly is community policing? And the definition, real quick, for you guys is, get your pens out, take your notes, go back, scan it later, you keep this. It's a partnership between citizens and police that provides for a shared responsibility in solving community-related problems. A partnership between citizens and police that provides for a shared responsibility. So basically, in a nutshell, that means if I come out to your community that I have to spend 40 hours a weekend, if I can make it better for you, I'm making it better for me. I'm not having to deal with the crazy reports. I'm not having to deal with looking at a bunch of trash and drug dealers and so on and so forth. Good morning, Sharon. So that partnership has to be there. At the same time for you, you know, you're getting something out of it. You're developing a relationship with these officers. You're learning that these officers are people. You know, there is a difference between police administrations and these line officers. By the term line officer, what I'm talking about is the officer on the front line, those of us that you guys see on the street every day. And community policing is a term that we hear the police chiefs across the country throw out, and you usually hear them throw it out when their ass is in hot water. You know, when the town's on the front page of every paper or all over YouTube or burning up Facebook because the town's on fire for some event. So the police chiefs will quickly start talking about community policing. They can't implement it till the city council says something. And you'll hear the mayor that, oh, we've got to change things. But today what I wanted to talk about, because we go that different angle here, why don't we ever see it come to fruition? What's the holdup? Where's the snag? I mean, you're selling us this. It looks good. But why aren't you doing it? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And what I want you guys to do, take your notes or go back and listen to this. And if your department doesn't have community policing, go down there to the city council and ask why. If they're saying it's the end-all, be-all, if it's the solution, then you should have it. I've done community policing my whole career. I love it. It works. It puts you in touch with the community. It makes the community trust you. So it's a very effective tool, and it right now it's the only way to police. So the first thing we got to do, remember, you guys, a couple weeks back we talked about our neighborhoods. You got four types of neighborhoods, you know, or three types. I'm sorry. You got your safe zone. Your safe zone is usually your wealthier end neighborhoods where you got your gated communities, nice lawns, so on and so forth, and you really don't have a lot of crime out there. Then you got your transition neighborhoods, which probably most of us live in. That transitional neighborhood is a neighborhood that has some crime, but it's still relatively good. But it can go either way, whichever way the wind blows. I mean, you don't have to go too far to see crime, but at the same time, it's not in your front yard. That's the transitional neighborhood. Then you've got what I call the lost zone. It's just lost. That's that part of town. We all know about it. You got more boarded up buildings than occupied buildings. Hello, Baltimore. You know, you've got, you know, drug dealing everywhere, prostitution, gang violence, burnout cars on the street. And that's where cities tend to dump all this money as a pipe dream that we're going to dump in money and somehow revitalize that neighborhood. That's not going to come without some groundwork. So those three types of neighborhoods are what you have. And if you guys remember, I recommend, from my experience, go to your transition neighborhood. Because in the transition neighborhood, you're going to have the attention of your safe zone, and also you're going to gain the attention eventually of the lost zone. But you're going to stabilize that transitional neighborhood. It's kind of like when the neighbors on both sides of you have roaches and you've seen one or two, so you're going to spray up front to keep them over there. That's what you want to do. You got to buffer up that neighborhood. Get that one right. Once you get it in there, and that's going to take about a year, 18 months. You know, this is not a quick fix that you're doing. Okay? So we move from the neighborhoods. Now, you guys understand those. Now, let's go into the types of policing. You know, you've got your call-driven policing. Like I told you guys, call-driven is what you're going to see in L.A., what you're going to see in New York, Miami, Houston, Dallas, your really huge departments is going to be call-driven. That means these guys get on the street, these ladies, they got to answer what's on the screen. They've got calls holding. They got to get out there. They got to get out there, get these calls off the screen. They're never going to catch up. There's going to be calls holding when they go home. So call-driven is not the way you really want to go, but if you've got to do it, that's our first priority is to answer calls. And the next one you have is reactive policing. That's your officers who they're out there and, you know, they handle some calls, but in between calls, they're reacting to what's going on. Somebody ran a stop sign. They're going down the street. Somebody waved them down. They're going to react to what they see around them while they're still working their calls. Okay? And reactive policing is pretty much what most departments you're going to see day to day. Your medium-sized departments, you're going to see reactive policing. They're working their calls, but on the way to a call, they'll stop and they'll handle something. Your third one is your problem-oriented policing. Now, problem-oriented policing is not community policing. A lot of departments have instituted problem-oriented policing and have sold it as community policing. It is not community policing. What problem-oriented policing basically is I come out and I'm working my shift. And while I'm out there, I run into you. And I help you with your problem from beginning to end, you know, work you through it and set you up with counselors or tutors or whatever it is that you need to get through your problem. You reap a lot of benefits from that, and, you know, I've helped you with your problem, but I haven't impacted the community. See, that's the difference. Problem-oriented policing is individual-oriented. It can extend out to the neighborhood, but by and large, it's going to be helping individuals and empowering individuals. Community policing, it empowers entire geographic areas. Okay, community policing is different because when you get into it, you go into a large geographic area and you divide it into sub areas, which within that large geographic area, you'll see one part of that area that's your safe zone. You're going to see within that neighborhood a transition zone, and you're going to see in it not a loss zone, but a losing zone. So you want to hit that losing zone first and reassure that. And, you know, I've gone through with you guys what that takes, you know, getting out of your car, meeting the people, sitting down, finding out their priorities, what do they want the police department to do, bringing in all the resources. Now, I've also told you guys that, you know, don't let your chiefs tell you, oh, we have community policing. This is our community police section, and it's 5 officers. Or if you're in a big department, 20 or 30 officers. That is a community policing. That's problem-oriented policing on steroids. Community policing is a encompassing concept from the street officer to that civilian that you're going to meet in the police department, you know, to that detective that's going to handle your case, to the police administrators, to the supervisors. Community policing has got to be from the top all the way through the department. It cannot be, you know, just 5 officers out of patrol. That is not community policing. That is problem-oriented policing. And if your chief tells you he's wrong, either play in this video, give him my number, and I'll call him and tell him he's wrong. Okay? Because a lot of departments are selling you, saying, oh, we've got a community policing unit. No, your whole department should be doing community policing. Now, it's not economically feasible to say we're going to take 500 officers and make them community police officers. Because you have to go to schools, and it's some special training. So you send 20. Have those 20 come back, start implementing the program, working with the street officers to help solve the problems, and taking the street officers to the neighborhood meetings where the street officers can see how you interact with the community. And at the same time, they're getting that experience, and they slowly start chiming in on the meetings. The community learns them. Now you're training that street officer to be a community policing officer. So it's growing in-house. You make the initial investment to send a small selection of your officers to the school. Get them certified. Let them come back and train the rest. Now, you're growing. Ultimate goal is to get your entire department under the umbrella of community policing. Moving forward, the public wants it. It's not going to cost you that much after you get the initial officers trained. Now, we got to go into what is the basis of community policing. So, you know, I get people to ask me, well, why do you believe in this? Why does it work? You know, if you want to understand why it works and what it is, you have to go back really to the 9 principles of policing. And that's Sir Robert Peel. And you guys remember we talked about him, you know, 1829. He came up with the 9 tenets. And I'm not going to read through all of them because most of you guys that have followed me have heard him. I'm just going to read through a few of them. And this is back in 1829, how he knew. He had so much foresight into policing and the power and authority that we get. He knew it could go to where it's gotten today. Too much politics, too much special interest. So he wrote these 9 principles. And the first one is the purpose of the police force is to prevent crime and maintain order. Number 2 is the police depend on the approval and trust of the public in order to effectively do their jobs. See, that's where we've got lost in number 2. See, the God complex, you know, you guys can go back, you can look at the videos on YouTube, you can see the God complex, you know what I'm talking about. Number 2 said the police depend on the approval and trust of the public in order to effectively do their job. They don't say the wealth in the public. It doesn't say the public that likes the police. It says the public in general. Okay, when we don't have that approval and we don't have that trust, which in many geographic areas today in policing, we don't have that. So if we don't have that, how can we effectively do our jobs? Now, officers, don't get your feelings hurt. I'm not talking about every individual officer. I'm talking about the collective profession. Okay? Number 3 says the ultimate goal of policing is to achieve voluntary compliance with the law in the community. That's the ultimate goal, voluntary compliance. Number 4 says police must be unwavering in their duties and adherence to the law, maintaining impartiality and avoiding the temptation to be swayed by public opinion. See, and I'll post these up for you guys to read, but they're all here. You guys can check them out. But go through and read them because these things, they're very important. They're the backbone of what community policing is, and they're the backbone of what policing is. And they answer a lot of the questions that we go through today where we have certain things that are going on in the profession that seem to be unaddressed or ignored. And you've got a public that's not given information enough or educated enough to be able to carry the argument forward. So that's what we do here. We get down to it and we get that information out. I learn from you guys and you guys learn from me. You know, so we say, when we talk about why is a community policing being initiated, why isn't it being implemented, why isn't it being put into place? The answer, Chief, you stood up there with buildings burning in the background and you touted community policing. The Department of Justice came in and tore y'all a new one and you said we're going to do community policing. You know, but yet we haven't done it. What is the problem? Your first problem is your politicians. That's the first stumbling block into the effective implementation of community policing is your politicians. Don't you believe when they tell you and sell you that bill of goods, I believe in community policing 1,000%. I'm all for it. Oh, my God. If you're so much for it, why haven't you done it? Okay? I told y'all all the time, keep their ass on the griddle. You got to stay on top of them. Because the politicians, and you say, well, why would the politicians be worried about community policing? I'll tell you why they're worried about it. When that officer gets in that neighborhood and he's digging out ditches with you and he's planting grass seed with you and he's cutting grass with you and he or she is painting the church with you or they're painting the house with you or they're helping clean out somebody's backyard with you or they're sitting down at the after-school read-along program with you or they're at all the neighborhood meetings with you, you're going to start to get to know that person. You're going to start to trust that officer. You're going to start to ask questions to that officer. He's going to ask questions to you. He's going to open up to you. And then here it comes. You get one officer that might get to know 500 or 1,000 people. These politicians get scared. Let's see, who's he going to get them to vote for? Is he going to come out and endorse somebody? It might not be me. Oh, my God. He's getting too much power. She's getting too much power. So they start making them little phone calls. And I can tell you from personal experience, they make them phone calls. You know, we need to dial back on this. We need, you know, it's doing good, but we need to trim this off, or we need to do that. Yes, it happens. These are your politicians, whether they're your city council people, whether you have parish captains or whatever the different precinct volunteers. These are these people they know the basis. They're in these meetings. They hear the hard talk. So your first line of why community policing doesn't get implemented is your politicians. I don't care what they tell you on TV. Most of us are grown folks. We've been around politicians to know they got two mouths, one in the front and one in the back. And half the time when they're talking to you, they're talking out the back of their neck. You know, there's a few honest ones out there. Maybe I'll meet some of them one day. But for the most part, don't believe what you see on that TV. Catch them in the coffee shop. Catch them somewhere else and you ask them, what's your feelings on community policing? Is it discussed in the council chambers? You know, have y'all asked the chief about implementing it? What's the holdup with getting it? You told us 2 years ago in July after the riots we'd have it. We don't have it. What's the reasoning? Keep their feet to the fire. Next step is the police administrators. Here we go. And I know I got dead ears. I know they're listening. Police administration. They'll tell you, we're big proponents of community policing. We love it. It drops crime. It's just the greatest thing since sliced bread. You guys have watched this or listened to this show enough or watched the Facebook Live. I said crime pays. Now, I'm not telling you that there's a police administrator in this country that doesn't want crime to drop. I'm not saying that at all. So anybody trolling, don't go run back and say, he said that police chiefs don't want to drop crime. What I'm telling you is, the police chief is measured by numbers or the absence thereof. How do we know you're doing a good job, chief? Show us. What are you going to show them, chief? You don't work calls, so you don't have a sheet that you can go in and say, I worked this many calls. You got to show numbers and statistics. What does community policing do? It drives down those arrests because you're moving out crime. It drives your call load down because people have learned to work through their problems or mediate their problems. So you don't have those numbers to take before the council or to show up. So how do you convince a city council person or a city manager that you're doing your job? Because here's the secret, you all. Police departments are not used to measuring prevention. We are so stat-driven these days. How many tickets did you write? How many arrests do you have? How many raids did we do? We want to get this grant, and we got to show these numbers to get this grant that they don't even know how to celebrate prevention. We prevented X amount of car burglaries. We prevented X amount of murders. We prevented X amount of this. You got to celebrate your victories. So the police administrators say, okay, we're going to try this community policing thing. And they get a satellite group of officers. They handpick them or choose them or test for it, whatever they do. And they send you to the schools, and they put you out there on the street. And initially, they're on board with it. This is going to be great. Let's send these guys out there, man. It's going to take the heat off of me at these council meetings. And, you know, I can tell you guys from having done it, it is a lot of work. You're at every neighborhood meeting, every special function meeting. I've dug out a lot of sidewalks and ditches and painted churches and schools and houses and cut grass and all this stuff gets into building that trust to solve the crime. Trust me, it works. But as you do this and you grow that bond with the community, where they're not citizens anymore, they become your friends. You love coming to work. You get out there and you're looking at this neighborhood grow and knowing that you've got a part in it, so you're invested in it, and everything's going great. Until you start going to the council meetings and these problems come up, and the city council people tell the police administration, we don't want to hear from you. We want to hear from Officer so-and-so. He knows what's going on over there. She knows what's going on over there. Have them come in. Or the residents start standing up in the neighborhood and saying, well, Officer so-and-so was working with us on this project, and we needed, I don't know, trash roll-offs, or we needed a dumpster over here, or we needed a trash truck. And he went and asked the city, who's supposed to be supporting us in community policing, and they said no. Now, these citizens, because I got to be transparent. So if I go back and say, well, I asked them, and they told me no. Now, they're going to hold your ass to the fire in that council meeting. They're going to go, why was he told no? We've invested this much. People don't like being put under the gun. So where's the pressure go back to? It's going to go back to the police administrator from the politician. Tell them to dial it back. Don't go back and tell those people that. Once you break your word with the people, you can't get that back. So the officer has to make a decision. Do I toe the company line and fade the heat for the politicians and the chief? Or do I keep my alliance with the people who I've sworn, taken an oath to protect and serve? And for me, I just go ahead to fade the heat. I can use a tan anyway. I'm looking a little pale. You know, you just take the heat and you move on down the road. Because as long as those citizens back you and what you're doing isn't violating the policy and you're trying to give something that can help, then that's fine. You know, most of the time when we did it here, we got a lot of support. I was never told no. I didn't go through that, but I know I've got friends in other cities that do community policing that have gone through that. So your police administrators get nervous. You're getting too much power. You're getting known. You're getting notoriety. People are calling the police department. They don't even want to talk to the chief. They want to talk to you because they're not going to get smoke and mirrors. You're going to tell them just the way it is. That makes people nervous. Police departments, by and large, are like little kingdoms. You know, you guys, we're not, it's not this one big blue happy family where everybody's hugging behind closed doors. I know they don't tell you, but that's why you're here. You might as well hear it. There's a lot of jealousy in police departments, a lot of envy, spite. You've got all the units compete against each other. You know, just like, it's like any job site, pretty much. We're no different than anywhere else. You know, people is power struggles and little kingdoms being built. So you got to deal with all that. And this is what the neighborhood officer has to deal with, the few that volunteer initially to do it. Then you get down to your next group. And this is the group who ultimately will control your politicians and your police administrators. That's your special interest groups. That's your rich folks. Okay? These are the people who look at a geographically deprived area. You know, you've got abandoned buildings, you've got shut down factories, burnt out cars, trash everywhere. That neighborhood is worthless, but it sits on the river. It sits in a desired spot. That neighborhood officer is fighting to get the few people that live there to commit in, to come in, to get the property values up. He or she is working to get these tag buildings torn down. You know, so as all of this is happening, You've got investors who want that property value to stay low so they can come in and buy it cheap, rezone it, show you a suitcase of money that's less than you really think it is, and you move somewhere you can't afford to live, and then they go down and rezone the area and build what they want to build. And I guarantee you when they get done building, the people who used to live in the area won't even be able to afford to come there and park somebody else's car. Then you rezone it, and you put in all your shops and things like that. And that's city improvement. I'm not knocking that. But that's what your special interests are looking at. They're concerned with money. They're not concerned with the quality of life for those people who live there or have to move. That crime city, crime pays. The longer it sits and deteriorates, that's less these people have to destroy, whether it's a physical building or your will to live there. That's right. Gentrification. Pierre, you hit it. That's exactly what it is. Okay, and it's American business. That's the way business is done. So when you have a house in these low-income neighborhoods and you look at it and you say, I wish I could live over there, well, you know what? You may not economically be able to live over there. So why don't you take over there and bring it to where you are here? Community policing allows you to do that. You can get your crime level to what over there's crime level is. You can get the sirens and the gunshots out of your neighborhood like over there. Is it going to take some work? Absolutely. It's going to roll up your sleeves. Is it going to take some courage? Yes, it is. Is it going to take the right officers? Here we go. See, here's the key. A badge and a gun does not make you a candidate to be a community police officer. It does not. You've got to have a mentality. You don't have to know everything about black people or white people or Hispanic people or Asian people or poor people, but you have to be willing to learn. That means you have to be willing to talk to them to get that knowledge. You're evolving as an officer when you do community policing. They're evolving as citizens. And when they see their neighborhood that they want, and it's important that you let them have that victory. It's not the city. Well, the city put a lot of resources in there. Drop a bullshit flag on that. These people pay taxes, okay? Maybe the city just brought a trash truck over there instead of out to the same neighborhood it goes out to once a month to pick up somebody's couch that don't want it, okay? Just being real. Just because you're finally having to put resources into neighborhoods you should have been putting it into because those people are taxpayers from a city perspective, don't sit back and act like you're doing anybody any favors. And you get, as far as police administrators, well, that's going to hurt Manning. Send a whole bunch of Manning over there. You know what? It might hurt Manning, Chief, but I'll tell you what, just pretend it's one of these rich neighborhoods that wants a special event. You don't mind sending officers. Just pretend it's one of these companies in town that wants something, and you don't mind bringing officers in overtime at all to do that. These people over in these poor neighborhoods are trying to survive, and if they're willing to work with us, we ought to break our neck to get out there and work with them. And that means sometimes you're going to have to put some of the I want to say this correct so nobody's feelings get hurt. Some of the traditional recipients of privilege, you're going to have to put them on hold. If their feelings get hurt, you know what? You make six figures a year, Chief. You can tell them what to do with their feelings while you go over and administer to a lot of these neighborhoods that have been neglected. Because if you don't, that neighborhood officer is going to go in there and be transparent. He's going to tell these people why. Community policing is built on trust. 100% trust, 100% open dialogue. Only as successful as the chief and the police administration and the mayor and the city council allows it to be. And it has to be that way. And that's one of the reasons why we're running into so many problems getting community policing put in place. If you live right now, if you guys got pens out, jot down some quick notes, you know, if you're call your police department and ask, do we have community policing? Once again, the four types, call-driven, reactive policing, problem-solving, and community policing. Do not let them tell you that problem-solving policing or problem-oriented policing is two different terms, same thing. They are not community policing. Don't let them tell you that because they're just trying to tell you, yes, we're producing. If they say we have a community policing section, how many people, how long has it been in place? Is there a strategic plan? Good morning, Shannon. Is there a strategic plan to grow this? If it's been implemented for 5 years, with 15 officers, and there's still 15 officers, why aren't we at 20 officers now? Where's the drive to spread this throughout the department? And also ask them, is this on a grant? Are you doing community policing on a grant? Because I can tell you, when the grant runs out, they're going to drop it like a hot potato. Soon as the grant runs out. But, you guys, that's one of the biggest things that I tout and I push is community policing. Because for me, it's the only thing I know, it's worked for me. It allows you to be transparent, but you have to have the officers with the right mentality, because you got to hurt some feelings. Both in the department and in the community. You go to these neighborhood meetings, the first stage of neighborhood meetings that officer goes to, they're not easy meetings. There are some four-letter words, and the Lord's name is called out, and it's not in a good way. And some folks will throw chairs across the room, but that's real. You can't get all upset. I mean, you're introducing hope into a neighborhood that has been hopeless. You're trying to get belief and truth from a neighborhood that's been lied to. You're trying to offer them things that they've been deprived of for generations. So you have to really work to earn that trust in these neighborhoods. You're fighting demons that have been instituted and put in these neighborhoods for years. And you're telling them, if you believe in me and you work with me, I'll work with you and we can do this. But there has to be a guarantee from that department to that community that you're not going anywhere. Because that neighborhood will attach to that officer. They'll work with others when they have to and when you're off. But by and large, they will attach to that officer. And if the department moves you, it's going to disrupt that community. And they're going to get met with some resistance. So these are the things. So we say, what are the benefits? And if you guys want to call in 646-716-4621, just press 1. And you can, I'll get you right on and we can get the discussion going. Okay, what are the benefits to the community? If we do this community policing thing you're talking about, if we buy into this, what benefits do we get? And before I get into that, I'm gonna get into this first caller that hit me from the 818 area code 5722. What's going on? How you doing?
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO of the Entertainment Worldwide Network, based in sunny Las Vegas. And, Brother Stan, you are on fire today, my brother. I've been pastoring for over 10 years, and a lot of times when it comes to the community and the police, as a pastor, we're kind of stuck in the middle. No matter what we read in the Bible, there's a human resource aspect to it, and I love the way that you're dropping the knowledge, because you're debunking a lot of the myths. Everybody thinks that just because you put on this suit of blue, it's like a shield of armor. You can't be shot. And right now, it's a hot melting point between the community and the kids keep getting shot, man. Now, I called in to find out just because you said community policing is the situation as a pastor. What can we do as a man of the clergy to work with the authorities so we can kind of defuse some of this stuff before it happens?
Okay, I'll tell you what, Pastor. Now, make sure, don't hang up. See, this is like the you in the barbershop right now, so you ain't, you on. So I'm going to tell you, when I did it, the very first thing that I reached out to in was the black church. Okay, now, I'm going to tell you, I keep it real. And R-E-V period don't always mean reverence. Sometimes it means reverse. Enough of these churches drove the community backwards, doing voter rights legislation and all that every year, because they're not going down there and educating the folks. But what I did is I got a hold of the churches and held them accountable. Because now I can tell you, I don't know about Vegas, but I can tell you in most inner city areas, if I'm a drug addict and I got a drug problem and I'm visiting your area and I want to find a drug house, all I've got to do is find a black church and walk within a block. There's going to be a drug house there. So
my God,
what did we used to do? We used to teach what were the council agendas that were up on the table to be voted on. How do you register to vote? Which kids need school clothes? Which kids need the church needs to start taking care of the neighborhood, not the business. See, that Bible,
yes,
Jesus said he as well is not in need of a physician. So we can't keep saving saved folks and recruiting folks that we want to sit on the pews next to us. And then for a lot of preachers, it's easy to stand behind brick and mortar on a Sunday morning, elevated above everybody, and tell them what they need to do, and then not go out there to where the people who really need to hear it. Miraculous truth test is not praying God somewhere, but taking him there.
Right.
The church,
right.
The black church particularly, has got to go back to being accountable and responsible for the neighborhood. It has historically been our city hall. It has been where we came to seek justice and be heard when city hall wouldn't hear us. But it's surrendered.
I really feel like this, too, and I'm glad you brought that up. I got off from behind the pulpit. You know, I've been in the we're going around to the top 22 markets, highest crime, highest violence, no media coverage. And we're purchasing 22 abandoned buildings, and we're going to work with the state, with prisons, to have a reentry program. At the same time, the people within a 50-mile radius who has felonies, you know, some of the felonies are pass and fail, but it's like somebody stole a car or something. It's not like nothing that they did was really bad. They just made a bad decision trying to get something to eat. So I say that to say, I sent you an email, Officer Stan. I want you to check on your website. I got my promoters promoting the show. I want to get with you because the type of out-the-box thinking, that's the kind of thinking I need. We have 300 winning team members, but the whole idea about the winning team is we don't get into your religious set. We understand that everybody's lacking resources, knowledge, wisdom, financial resources, information, and we're working and pulling our resources together to bring forth change. So somebody like you would be an asset to the team. I really appreciate the show, man. This is great knowledge, and a lot of times you don't get an opportunity to actually speak to a police officer because they're working.
And I'm going to call you when we get off here and we have time to talk, but, you know, that's one of the things, too. Now, I'm very critical of the police a lot of times in certain aspects. And I tell people, I'm a police officer, but I'm not anti-police. I'm anti the way we're doing it. Okay, we're like a quantum computer still running on MS-DOS. And policing is just like a computer. It's only as good as the operating system. So the ancient way of doing things, this is not 1875 anymore. We've got to update how we do things, you know. So, yeah, I'm going to definitely get with you because I'm going to tell you, a lot of these churches need a wake-up call. Because these young people today, I talk to these guys on the street, you know, their big thing with the preachers are they talk noise in that church. But come meet me while I got my pistol in my pants, where it's just me and you and truth. I ain't going to church.
Come on.
They might take my life. Well, I thought you gave it to Jesus. So what you doing,
I got to say this, Officer Stan. What happened was I got tired of watching all these videos on Facebook, and what I noticed, one thing that's evident truth, everybody feel like they're a cameraman, but some cases that agitates the situation. It's not even about getting recorded. It's about treating a man like a man. Now, if I roll up on you and smack the fire out of you, okay, well, now it's my turn to defend myself. But if I don't say nothing to you and then I go over there and provoke you, that's a whole different story. So I say that to say a lot of these cases, it's the everybody's around and it's like a town hall meeting. Like me and you talking, it's a ping pong conversation. I say something to offend you, okay, it could be de-escalated. But if it's 10 people, oh, Pastor Don, you just said that to Officer Stan? Oh, man, I can't believe you said that. And then boom, instantly, everything goes in 1,000. So I say that to say I'm all about preventative maintenance. I'm all about prevention over cure. You know, if we can work with the kids now. I've been in the entertainment industry for 20 years, and after seeing so many kids lose, I understand what it is. They don't have the right going in. If you got bad audio going in, no matter how much you dress it up, mix it, master, it's going to be bad coming out. So my point that I'm making is what you're doing with our initiative, we need you to be implemented because you're going to have to go to some of these ground zero situations and actually have some sit-down shots with some of these cops. Because exactly what you said, it's not the community, it's the ones, it's two or three people in the community that's controlling it, causing all the ruckus, and then that trickle-down effect is what everybody sees, and then that stuff gets blown up on CNN, and it just keeps escalating, getting worse. So my goal is to put more positivity in the world, and if we get more positive, eventually the negative will cease.
Right, and that comes with being transparent. We, whether it's preachers, whether it's police, people in leadership positions, historically, especially black folks, we elevate ourselves so high, sometimes we elevate ourselves out of the community. And then we go back and we want to give these people the answers, and they're going, well, wait a minute. You know, I mean, yeah, we look alike, but you know, you're not out here dealing with what I'm dealing with, because we don't meet them where they're at.
Correct.
You know, particularly with a lot of churches in inner city communities. We can go over there and we can go to the corner of Murder and Mayhem and see the Second Baptist Church or the First Episcopals or the Holy Water or whatever. And but, you know, when we ask where the preacher lives, he lives out in the suburbs at Lovely and Lacey. See,
right.
But God called me to this church. Well, how can the shepherd lead the sheep if he doesn't live in the pasture?
Right.
They see your Mercedes come in on Sunday and then they don't see you again. And I don't mean to be offensive, but there's one thing about my show. I keep it real. Some of these churches on Sunday, the only thing missing behind the pulpit is a ski mask and a pistol. Because there's no money going into the community. Now, that's hard talk. It's going to offend some people, but that's just the way it is. Hey, hang on for me, Pastor. Let me get this other caller in here. And I still got your mic
open. Okay, I'm
calling from the 204 area code, 5160. What's going on?
How you doing, Stan? This is Rob from the Roundtable.
Hey, what's going on, Rob?
Definitely. I just had a quick question for the pastor since we have one on the line and everything. Shout out definitely to, you know, to everyone, all the listeners, and, of course, to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm curious, Pastor. So we're all aware that in the black churches are typically housed in areas that are low income. And so My question to you is, while we talk about, you know, community policing, while we talk about, you know, just the community in general, I mean, it can't just be policing. Of course, we have to, you know, go backwards and say, well, how are we raising them, or how are we implementing them into society? And so what I would like to know is, what are we doing as the black culture, what are we doing, you know, in conjunction with the churches or with, you know, with third party vendors possibly, to expand on entrepreneurial services, business ownership, independent wealth? Because when we can build the block, that's when we can teach our philosophy, and we can teach our kids how to interact with people. First of all, if they look like you, you shouldn't be trying to conflict with them. And so I think if we have assistance from not just, you know, police officers and not just concerned citizens, activists, but also from, you know, the black church, what are they doing to help, you know, teach these poor people how to develop independent wealth?
Well, for me, and I'm going to say for my church, the name of my church is Entertainment Worldwide Network. Our goal is to teach the CEOs of tomorrow real business today. I've trained over 1,000 people on how to write business plans, on how to actually transition from working at the post office for 20 years and working for yourself. When you go to the post office, they tell you who to see, when to see them. And then when you work for yourself, you got 8 hours every day and you're like lost. Really, you have a 24-hour day, but your normal 8-hour, 10-hour shift, you got an hour getting ready, an hour going home. So I say that to say, with me personally, I'm teaching CEOs and the ones who are not CEOs, I'm providing the small business entrepreneurs, interns, and resources where, okay, they might not have a budget of $500 to actually go get a service provided, but I got somebody that just got out of college that can provide that service, be more than happy to take $150. Now I've just created revenues where there was none, and because we killed the skepticalness, because I've endorsed that person, it makes it easier. I have over 300 winning team members that they all come from different backgrounds in life. My whole idea is to teach the people how I do my business with business plans, CEOs, every major movement, Black Lives Matter, the Civil Rights Movement, the Martin Luther King thing. Every time there's a major movement and you're about to flip the switch and tell America we're about to be right and we're about to take care of ourselves, whoever's the ringleader ain't get shot. I've seen that happen too many times. So to combat that, I make everybody read a three-page business plan that I got a $15,000 loan. I took the first $3,600 out of the loan, paid the bank back to give me $300 per month to give me a good year of payment history, took the other $1,140, brought pads, pens, laptops, QuickBooks, Pro Tools, and an industrial printer so I could print all my stuff. I did that over 20 years ago. The point that I'm making is you're absolutely right. We don't have enough people out there educating. Not us as a black clergy on the whole, we're so busy with no not losing any members, we don't want to go outside of our church. We don't want to talk to other people because we feel like God only operates in our business and our building. Just only we're the only one that can talk to God. So can't nobody else in the congregation talk to God except for us. And sometimes as the man of God, we have that church hurt. And once that church hurt happens, the people leave out the church. They go get drunk. And then on, next thing you know, y'all guys are showing up to lock them up. So it's a nasty cycle. But one thing I will say, I'm joined in shows. We've been on over 1,000 podcasts just like this, delivering information, receiving information, exchanging wisdom, taking notes. So when we put our $4.5 million initiative down to buy the 22 abandoned buildings, we're not going over there to where somebody been selling dope for 50 years, telling them to go get another operation or another career. We were slowly taking our head out the lion's mouth as opposed to trying to go in there and implement change overnight, because it never happens that way. But if we gradually do it, eventually the world will see and the time will take its course. Hopefully I answered your question, sir.
Hey, Pastor, hang on for a minute, because I'm going to add something to what you just said. I agree with everything you just said. But I think when we're talking about community policing, we're going into everything you're saying, empowerment, that's fitting exactly in line. But I still want to go back. I got to go keep it. I want to be at that dirt level. I mean, I'm going to go sub-seed. I mean, when you bury the seed, we can still go under that to get to the problem. And my thing is, as long as we allow stores in our neighborhoods, and when I say ours, white folks, you too, because you know what? If you're in that low-income neighborhood, that's what we're talking. We're not talking about black neighborhoods. We're talking about low-income neighborhoods. So as long as these stores are in our neighborhoods with nothing but cigarettes and malt liquor and everything you need to do drugs but drugs, and you get drugs in the back room, no fresh vegetables, no fresh fruit, no fresh meat. You can't get milk in there. The cow that gave the milk been dead 2 years by the time it's on the shelf. Half the dairy products that turn to cottage cheese or blue cheese.
Right.
You know, as long as we allow these substandard BS stores to operate in our neighborhood, we're the only people who allow it. And you know what? That guy opened that store to make money. If you go in there and you say, you know what, until you get potatoes in here, I'm not shopping in here. Until you get tomatoes in here, I'm not shopping in here. Until you get fresh milk in here and orange juice in here, you got every kind of malt liquor the law allows.
Officer Sand, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Excuse me, sir. Can I interject right there? That's it. You hit it dead on nail. You don't know you're doing something wrong until somebody come and tell you wrong. So if you grow up in mud all your life, all you know is mud. But the moment you get out of the mud and go into some cleanness, when you go back to the mud, you're going to be able to realize it. But if you never get an opportunity to see something other than what you know, then that's your perception on reality. And that's what happened. A lot of these people in these rural areas and these urban, I like to call them death zones, just like you said, they've never seen no more than 10 blocks, so they don't know other than what the elders tell them, and the elders don't have enough information because they never seen any 10 blocks. Henceforth, what I'm saying is it's like it's a circle. The people that's supposed to be training, you're training people to loot.
But I'll tell you what, let me just hear from a man real quick. You know,
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok.
I mean, you can't do nothing, but you got to drop some Malcolm behind that. I got my brother right now, TKD, Tyrone K. Dunmore. I'm going to let him get him the way in here on this real quick. And I need everybody that's on, just hang on, and we're going to get back to you for our closing remarks. TK, what's up?
Hey, what's up, brother? Listening to, as you know, just waiting in the bullpen, ready to throw a couple pitches. I want to go to the root. When you talk about community policing and getting back to the substance, root substance, why don't people want to do it? I think the reason why a lot of the times it's not implemented or it never comes into true fruition is because people don't want to give up control. And there's a mindset that's set in place that is basically the them against us, or as you say, the God complex. So if they're the God complex, what would that make us? That makes us the devil. So it already sets us up like in rivalries or an adversary or opponents. You know, you're a civilian, even though all police officers are civilian workers. They work for the community, supposed to work for the community. The biggest animal, or I would say demon, or I would even say monster, is the ego. It's the power struggle, and that's in all relationships. I think one of the problems is, too, that when those, you know, whether it's in business or it's in relationships, whatever kind of relationship, there's one that's always going to try to set themselves up, or they're set up as the boss or the supervisor, the manager, and their job is to be what? To keep things in, under control, or keep things in control, and they have that superiority complex, as opposed to those who are in the streets or those who work for them are the subordinates. So they're under ordinary. You know, you break down the word subordinate, you're under ordinary, and it's a thing just like with genes. Like you have dominant and you have recessive. So you set up, or it's set up like a superiority complex against inferiority complex, and that totally goes against the human spirit. And the human spirit is going to fight, is going to rebel, is going to resist against being controlled, because the human spirit is that of freedom, is that of free will of man, you know. And so it's a criminal state of mind just to think like that. When I mean criminal state of mind, police officers, as you said many times before, our job is to control crime. Well, what causes crime? What's the conditions that create this state of mind? And we know there's a whole lot of them. One of them is unemployment. So we already know, well, one is unemployment, then we got to find ways to get either create jobs or get people jobs, get them in training, or set up apprenticeship programs or something. Another one of those state of mind that causes crime is substance abuse. The first sense of substance abuse is power. That's the first line of substance abuse. Power. People abuse power because you just can't give anybody or everybody power, because they will misuse it. They will abuse it. And another sense of, we say substance abuse, we talk about drugs, illicit drugs, whether it's from the street or whether it's legal prescription drugs, whether it's alcohol. And we know the underlying current of all that is a feeling a lack of worth, a lack of value. You're not having a pride about yourself. You suffer from low self-esteem. So these are deeper internal problems that we're having within our own being, as just being a human being. So you have either something that's feeling this way, or some things, a group of things making us feel a certain way. And most of that way of the things is hopelessness or powerless. You know, you don't feel powered. So if we're really going to do community, which is common unity, what is our common unity? It should be our humanity. The fact that we're human beings, first and foremost, before we put any position, before we take any badge, before we wear any gun, before we wear any collar, we are human beings first. We are earthlings. We are earth inhabitants. We are planetarian citizens. We're citizens of this planet, you know. So that's our commune. We got to, you know, come together on that first, understand that first. But whatever we're dealing with in the human experience, and regardless what you do, you're not exempt from financial woes or money problems. You're not exempt from health issues, whether you're sick mentally, physically, or emotionally. You know what I mean? And you got relationship woes, whether it's amongst coworkers, your peers, and peer pressure ain't just for kids. It's for grown-ups, too. Whether it's in your personal relationship with your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your wife, your ex-wife, your husband, your ex-husband, your baby mama, your baby daddy. We're dealing with housing, residential challenges, our housing situations. We're dealing with education, lack of education, school. So I'm bringing these things up all as the root cause of what causes the criminal mind. And you can't fight crime unless you go to the root of the crime and give it an antivirus. Give it something to make it heal, to make it better. But as long as people are going to continue bucking for positions of power, and instead of empowering others, we're going to still have this struggle. The true power is empowering others to have a sense, a good sense, of increasing the quantity by the means, meaning your age. We want you to live a long and a quality life. You know, I'll say it again, quantity and quality. That is true empowerment. That's a relationship. That's what you do with your spouse. That's what you do with your kids. That's what you're supposed to do in any relationship. Maximize the human spirit, soul, and essence of your total existence. Don't just think of policing as maximized security prison or being locked up,
exactly,
or incarcerated or confined. We have to maximize the freedoms that we have, our veterans have fought so valiantly for. So we're like being an oxymoron, like, okay, people went and gave the advice, whether it was in the military or if it's your street officers, your line officers out there fighting crime every day. We got to reduce crime, but as long as crime creates capital, and long as we want to keep deeming this thing a capitalist, which it is a society, then there is,
right,
some type of really advantage to having crime, because it creates money. It creates wealth. It,
exactly,
creates finances,
exactly,
for certain people. And we have to be an officer. And I'm in with this. An officer. An office, where's an office? Office where business is generally taken care of, right? A seer is somebody who's supposed to be able to have what they call supernatural insight, or supernatural insight, not a mediocre, unnatural outsight, which a lot of people have. So instead of trying to control things, we have to learn, get rid of that word control in your mindset. Think of cooperation. Cooperation, when you break down the word cooperation, it's a dual operation. It's a dual operation because you don't have no business unless you have each other. Well, I don't care if you're the boss, the manager, the chief, whatever. Without your line people, without your frontline people, you have no business. I don't care what you own. So we got to respect the fact that we're all on the same team. And that team is meaning together, everybody will empower more. Let's together, everybody, let's empower more, not suppress more, not beat up each other more, not attack each other more, not distrust each other more. We got to learn to empower. And you know what? When you empower people, you drop all fears. Only a person that's fearful of losing power doesn't want to give up no power. They want to hold it all for themselves. Thank you, Stan.
All right, brother. Look, I'm going to drop a few points on that, then I'm going to go back down through and give everybody that called in the final comments, because that's what we do here. If you call in here, you get on. Everybody, you know, we keep you on if you got the time, and I don't end my show because it's not incumbent upon me to have the last word. We're all in this together. But tied to what you said, I'm going to, you know, I was listening to you, and I'm going to drop something that, you know, that went through my mind as far as when we look at our leaders that we select to lead us, whether it's in community policing or whether it's a specific geographic challenge in reference to policing or whether it's even race relations. There are some qualities in a leader that we absolutely need to look for. I call them control points. And one of the things is, you know, the importance. How important does this leader think he or she is? Are they more important than the cause? Are they more important than your personal interests? Are they pompous? Hello, 45 up there in the White House. Let me get off my politics thing for somebody to hang up on me. But how important does this leader project he or him, her or himself to be? Are they more important than the issue? The next thing is relevance. How relevant are they? It's nice that you have a PhD. It's nice that you have an REB. It's nice that your officer so-and-so, chief so-and-so. But what makes you relevant to this issue? You own a store in the neighborhood, but we never see you. So what qualifies you? What makes you relevant to this cause other than you're a property owner or the city pays you to work in that area? You know, the next thing we got to go down to is position. Your position in society does not qualify you as an expert in low-income neighborhoods dealing with the challenges that we have to go through. Hello, Mayor somebody. You hear me? If you want to know about the crime, why don't you go to the people who transformed their lives and used to do the crime and ask them how to deal with the issue? The gang members can tell you how to deal with the gangs. The prostitutes can tell you how to deal with prostitution. The drug dealers can tell you how to deal with the drug issue. You know, you got to go back to the experts on the problem, and being educated in the halls of education somewhere in a school does not qualify you to be an expert on the condition of the problem. Hello, officer. Head and shoulders that never gets out the car. that thinks you know everything that the neighborhood needs to go through, but you never get out the car to talk to anybody. You've seen it from the safety behind the glass with the windows rolled up and the air conditioner blowing, listen to your favorite radio station. Now let's go on and just get real about it. Hello, police chief, sitting up in the ivory tower, sipping specialized coffee on the phone with somebody planning where you're going to go eat brunch before you go eat lunch, before you eat dinner, before you go home. I'm talking to you. I ain't talking to these officers that's out there in the muck and the mire, the ones that get out the car, the ones that are dealing with the hardships, the ones that bring some of these people's problems home because they give a damn about these people, because they have to live here and look at these people suffer every damn day and then come back and deal with a bunch of nonsensical foolishness on the behalf of politicians and disconnected police administrators that want to legislate the problem away or want to act like it doesn't exist. And then you got to go out here and get in the car and look at these people suffer day after day after day. And they're looking to you and say, well, where does help come from? And you got to lie to them because you know that nobody behind you, they don't give a damn. They ain't got in the car with you to say, take me to the problem. Hello, city council people. Guess what? Your city council area is your responsibility on the night shift as well as the day shift. The good part of your district is just as important as the bad part of your district. And I'm gonna go on and get off that soapbox, but, you know, that's the personal part of me. And one of the things, when I do this, I'm 100% real. I don't get paid to do this. I enjoy doing it. I like educating. I like learning from you guys. You know, and I mean, I enjoy having a place like the Reverend came here. We're going to do a show with him where he can get his message out because I like real people. And my thing is, when you call up here, just say how you feel. I ain't going to hang up on you. This mic is open. I don't care. You can be a Klan member, call up here. I'm going to ask you questions so I can learn from you. I ain't never burned a cross and wore a sheet, so I don't know what it's like to be in there. I know what I've read, but I want to hear from you. And that's the best way to do it. Just go on and keep everything real. This is that comfort zone that we all come to. So we're gonna get ready to wrap it up. Boy, Facebook burning up. What's up, Tay? Melissa, everybody's on here. Rob, I'm gonna hit you first. You got 2 minutes. Any topic you want, what do you want to talk about?
Great show, Stan. I just wanted to pass along to, you know, the pastor. You could follow us at we do have a community organization following, you know, on social media at facebook.com/GCCPROD. We just started a new roundtable network page where we're trying to go ahead and be inclusive of people who might not necessarily follow roundtable, but might want to also, you know, to get updates on what's going on in the area. And we definitely love to have you in our roundtable community, and we would definitely love to have some discussions on how we can expand on entrepreneurship, you know, particularly, you know, Black entrepreneurship, and get our message out there so we can continue to influence, you know, our policy versus, you know, receive what we have from the community, you know, which may involve a racist police officer, which may involve, you know, police officers that just choose to profile because they know we're poor or something like that. But definitely great show, Stan. And at least on our end, at least with the citizens, the last little message I would pass along is we can always do more than we're doing, and we can always find a way to, you know, to fine tune what's already working. We should already be trying to find ways to develop and bring ourselves together just as a class of people. To rise up and influence, because there is power in numbers.
All right, brother. I appreciate you so much, man. You know, thanks for tuning in, man, and being part of the conversation. I appreciate you. All right, Pastor, you got 2 minutes. Anything you want to talk about?
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. This is Pastor Don Jr., CEO of the Entertainment Worldwide Network. Brother, if you could, I want to say my number really slow because I couldn't actually catch the handle. If you could send me a text message so I can make sure I get it, because it was an acronym. I think it was GPC. Or I got a little tongue tied there. But my direct number is 818-358-5722. Once again, that's 818-358-5722. My website is EWN Radio.
RADIO.com. Now, and in the next 30 seconds, I'll just go ahead and wrap it up. We have a $4.5 million initiative. We're going to the top 22 markets, highest crime, highest violence, under 200,000 of population. Four themes of the tour: Operation Brightside, turning negatives into positive. The four key themes are save the children, feed the hungry, peace in the streets, the Great Permission. We need winning team members. We don't have it all together. When I say we don't have it all together, I've already sent the paperwork off for them to release the $4.5 million, but at the end of the day, they don't release all that money in one shot, so they're releasing it in waves. So as a 300 winning team members, I got 240 people that's standing around with their hands out, and I got 60 people that's active in the field with me. I'm trying to change those members out to have 300 active members moving, working, being, shaking hands, kissing babies, campaigning. So what y'all are doing right now, getting out in the vineyard, we do this every day. We're on 3 to 10 different shows like this daily. So as we're taking notes and meeting the people, we're constantly going back over our paperwork and tightening it up. I say all that to say this is going to be the biggest civil rights movement, nonviolence. We're not all about, we're all about is resources. We're not about trying to change just an individual. We want to change the world, but we have to lead by example. I can't preach to anybody if they stomach growling, because no matter what I'm preaching, whatever God got for me, all they can hear is they stomach growling. So by us not having any resources, by people believing in Scientology, atheism, all that, no matter what goes on, I believe in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, but I know if I jump in front of a car, I will be ran over. I cuss, I smoke, I drink, but I'm a man. No matter what. Before I was Pastor Don Jr. CEO, I was Donnell Green Jr. So I know that we're doing something amazing, and because I'm aligning all these people, I've lived in 40 out of 50 states, so all these people I've smoked blunts with, got drunk with, they know me personally. Now that I got everything together, I need the right hands. I'm 98% of the way there. I'm looking for that extra 2% to bring it home. So with that being said, Officer Stan, to the brother that was speaking, I need you to text me, man. What you guys with that roundtable is very dynamic, and that's going to help bring this thing together. And just like the other brother said, community. You know, what are you bringing to the unity? So, this is where I'm going to be every Saturday, because this is what we need. And if I don't have an opportunity like this to meet people like y'all, we would be lost. If I was somewhere preaching, it's just a one-way situation. But when we ping-pong, we sharing this change, that wisdom. Now it's actually the knowledge in action. So I love what y'all are doing, man. Kudos to everybody that spoke. And to all the listeners under the sound of my voice, Heavenly Father, Lord, bless this mighty platform upon the trillions upon trillions that's going to hear this for the first time. Let something be said, something be moved to change their mind, change their spirit, touch their heart, let them open up their mouth so they can help somebody interact, be proactive to change the world. Forgive us of our sins, anything we done, said, has been displeasing in your sight, anything we purposely know that we did was displeasing in your sight, or even if we didn't know, we forever give you name, honor, praise, and glory in Jesus Christ's name. Amen, amen, and amen.
All right, Pastor, I appreciate you. Appreciate you. And, yeah, spread the word up there in Vegas, man. Tell them they need to tune in here on Saturday morning. Come in here. You know, they might get lit up 1 minute, but they'll be applauding the next. Before I let TKD take us out of here, I'm just going to say, you know, my new purpose for all this, my motto, if I had to sum myself up with, I still love my James Baldwin. Of course, my Maya Angelou, when they show you who they are, believe them. James Baldwin said that, I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. And to those that hear this and say, why does he do all this? They're making progress or they've got this. You know, we can't have resolution of the problem till we first have recognition of the problem. So that's why I do what I do. TKD, 2 minutes, man. We got to get out. Take us out.
I ain't going to take it. I'm going to do it shorter than that, man. My closing thoughts is we got to stop beating the drum of playing the victimization, playing that role. We're constantly, continuously recycling that and beating the drum on what divides us, what's tearing us apart. And we need to start creating an orchestra, you hear me? An orchestrative, big band, composition, score, like in a movie, that's going to move me, move us, move and unite us as a people. When I say as a people, as human beings, as humanity, we got to be committed to this role of becoming victorious in creating this composition and stop repeating and beating the drum of life ain't fair, the victimness. We stay plugged too much into playing the victim as opposed to doing what's necessary, like the pastor and other groups are doing all over the country. God bless them all. Play your part to just make things better. Stop to keep beating the drum of what's making this country worse. And as long as we stay focused on that, things will gradually, incrementally change for the better. And we may not see it in our generation, on our day and time, but just like Dr. King said when he made that speech, I might not get there with you, but I've seen it. And I can say I have seen in my lifetime the gradual mindset that has evolved out of apathy, and now we are really going at it. And it's good to know to be part of that team. Well, all those all over the globe, all over this country, regardless of where you're from. Because I know there's many people out there doing great work, but we won't get depressed. Don't worry about just don't get depressed while we're doing it. Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother. You know, I appreciate all you guys that tune in and listen to the shows and download them, all of y'all on Facebook. I mean, I love you guys. Y'all are always with me, and you send me good stuff and keep me up to date and you know, put up with my nonsense. I want to say the video that I put up, the intro to this show, you know, it's kind of when I'm sometimes when I'm doing what I do or and drives me, and I know the video's hard to see, and I did it that way on purpose, where I'm kind of faded and the images are faded, because those who are familiar with the images, Philando Castile, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, these images, you recognize the pictures. These are the things that come into my head when I get tired sometime, or I say, well, I'll put that show together tomorrow, or I'll research tomorrow, I'm tired. These people push me. They can't come and do anymore. So I have to do for them. I have to do for them to do for me, to be the best I can be. So that was kind of a representation of what goes on in my head when I'm speaking or researching or being motivated, because we can't live for ourselves. The only thing that I'm going to ask everybody to do is this week, do something for somebody. Not somebody who looks like you. Not somebody who has what you have. Just a stranger. And don't wait around for the thank you. Buy a cup of coffee and go on your way. You know, do something. And I want to see everybody here next week. Let's stay in touch. Let's keep this going. You guys, the shows are free. StanMason.com. Go to the Listen tab. Download them. You can do whatever you want to do with them. You can play them and do whatever it is you want to do. You know, you can share them. You know, you can go to the Listen tab. That takes you to my Facebook. And you can go to the Watch tab and hit the YouTube. And we're going to get out of here. And I'm going to holler at everybody next week. Appreciate you guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, please sit back because you are now about to go behind the blue curtain.
Get it done.